Aloha! Welcome to The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. I'm Bill Dorman, in for Catherine Cruz. Events in the Strait of Hormuz may be closer to Hawaii than you realize. We'll talk about the jet fuel connection through Asia with Gene Lee, the presidential chair at the East-West Center. A local affordability mystery. Hawaii Business calls it the disappearing affordable condos of Honolulu. Cynthia Wessendorf wrote that piece, and we'll talk with her. And do you remember your high school graduation? A new HPR project dives into the weeks surrounding one of the biggest moments in a young adult's life. We hear from seniors at Kapolei High School in the lead-up to crossing the commencement stage. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bill Dorman. Aloha and good morning. It's another day of uncertainty in and around the Strait of Hormuz, and some of that is touching Hawaii. As you just heard on news from NPR, Iranian drones and missiles have attacked the Gulf states of Bahrain and Kuwait. U.S. Central Command says it carried out what it called a round of defensive strikes in southern Iran today and near the Strait of Hormuz, targeting missile launch sites and Iranian speedboats used to lay mines. That's pushed up the price of oil, but there's another vulnerability that Hawaii has while the Strait of Hormuz remains blocked: jet fuel. Hawaii imports some 70-80% of the jet fuel it uses. And the Hawaii State Energy Office says 95% of those imports last year came from one place, South Korea. This year, it's up to 99%. That's because South Korea is a key regional oil refiner. And South Korea's government says nearly three-quarters of the crude oil it imports comes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's the starting point for most of the jet fuel that Hawaii uses. And it's a starting point for our first guest this morning. Gene Lee is the presidential chair at the East-West Center here in Honolulu. She's also covered Korea south and north for many years, including setting up the AP Bureau in Pyongyang back in 2012. Gene, thanks for coming in this morning. And, you know, that point about jet fuel, just showing that Hawaii has a closer connection to events in and around the Strait of Hormuz than many people realize.
Yes, thanks for having me on this morning. And our listeners are probably wondering, what does a conflict 8,000 miles away from us in the Middle East have to do with us here in Hawaii? And I would say this is our moment to give our listeners a wake-up call and to show exactly how what's happening in the Strait directly has an impact on us living on an island where we rely on planes, military, commercial, cargo, to not only transport us inter-island, to take us to the continent, to take us beyond, and also to bring in critical and essential supplies to the islands. And so, you know, because we only have one refinery here in Hawaii, that refinery is absolutely busy trying to refine all kinds of petroleum, crude oil into all kinds of petroleum products. So as you point out, we have been relying on South Korean refiners to provide the bulk of our jet fuel. And so what happens when those South Korean tankers are stalled in the Strait of Hormuz, can't get through the strait to take that crude oil to South Korea to be turned into jet fuel that powers our aircraft? And so that is a dilemma that I have been watching. Now, I have to say, I did, when this war broke out, I went ahead and bought all my plane tickets for the rest of the year because I knew that those prices were going to go up. And we don't see it quite yet because there are some reserves. But I think this is a looming crisis that we need to pay attention to. And it's not just the luxury of travel. It is the essentials, the everyday essentials that will be impacted. And so it's a moment for us to make that connection between what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz and how that impacts our daily life here.
And the path for that, as you're saying, goes through Asia, the fuel surcharges, and we're seeing that in some regional flights. Again, we're seeing it more in Asia than here in Hawaii directly right now, but that is something that has a potentially lingering impact, as you say, not just on vacation travel,
yes,
but also on supply lines.
Absolutely. And so this is an opportunity for us to also for us to look at how is it that we became so reliant on jet fuel from South Korea? And also, how did South Korea become the world's largest exporter of jet fuel? And I should point out that South Korea does not have its own oil fields, but what they do is import crude oil, mostly from the Gulf. And so they've built up over the decades this massive infrastructure to refine crude oil and turn it into all kinds of refined products. And so that's testament to their investment in technology, their innovation, the way that they've seen an opportunity. However, most of those refineries are built to process crude oil from the Gulf. And so because most of their crude oil cannot get out of the Gulf right now, they're in a quandary, and that's what we're seeing right now. So we have seen South Korean tankers stuck. There were 26 South Korean tankers stuck in the Gulf, unable to pass through the strait. So we should point out that just a little bit of, just to explain, this conflict broke out in the end of February. And pretty soon after that, Iran pretty much closed the Strait of Hormuz. And so there's been very, it used to be, I think 3,000 or so ships used to get through that narrow strait. Now it's just a month. Now it's just a few getting through. South Korea did have one tanker get through, so one over the past few months. But it's incredibly perilous. So they've had another South Korean tanker that had a Panamanian flag that was fired upon. So it's extremely perilous, also very difficult. They have to navigate how this is going to work out with the Trump administration as well, right? So it's been challenging. And then as we heard in the news today, that ceasefire may not hold. Tensions are still very high. The prospects of any kind of a deal seem distant. So we have to brace ourselves and prepare for this continuing. South Korea is looking for other ways to diversify its sources. But that also means they've got a limited supply. And we are just one of many, many customers.
It's true.
South Korean jet fuel.
You know, as South Korea's capacity elsewhere, if you're talking in the Asia Pacific, refining oil, it's South Korea, it's Singapore as key points. Australia also depends on imported petroleum products, many of which are refined in South Korea as well.
New Zealand. So South Korea has about 50 customers of its jet fuel. We are just one of them. We are also competing with California, which also relies on jet fuel from South Korea. So this is where it helps to pay attention, for us to pay attention to what's happening, and for us to really appeal to our legislators, our leadership, to try to build relationships both with South Korea, to advocate for Hawaii being part of any kind of commerce or trade deals, and also for us to build relationships with those South Korean refiners so that they pay attention to the reliance, the impact that sale has on Hawaii.
Those connections, again, a lot closer than many people realize. And then once you see that, you can't unsee it. And that link that Hawaii has not only to Asia Pacific, but also to events in the Gulf right now.
Absolutely. So just a reminder that we are an island in the middle of the Pacific, but supply chains are global, and we're absolutely reliant on maintaining those relationships, not only in the region, but beyond. And all of this is interconnected in this modern age.
We're going to be talking more about connections, continuing our talk with Gene Lee, who's followed events in Korea for decades, watches some of the impacts in Hawaii. When we come back, a different kind of influence that South Korea has in the world, including Hawaii. We're talking about BTS, global phenomenon. They were just here in Vegas, a K-pop group. So were a lot of folks from Hawaii. More on that just ahead. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Age and income don't matter when it comes to supporting HPR. Whether you're 23 or 83, you can make a meaningful gift to HPR through your will, trust, or other estate plan. You can even name the station as a beneficiary of a life insurance policy or retirement plan. And when you do, let us know so we can recognize you in our Legacy Society. Learn more and get started at hawaiipublicradio.org/legacy.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Hawaii Department of Transportation, celebrating all graduates this season with wishes for futures that include choosing not to drink and drive.
Welcome back to The Conversation. I'm Bill Dorman with the strains of BTS in the background. With me is Jean Lee. She's presidential chair at the East-West Center here in Honolulu. She's been a journalist, regional specialist on Korea for many years. Also one of many folks from Hawaii who was recently in Las Vegas for BTS. And Jean, not only a soft power global influence, they even show up in calculations of the South Korean economy.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you. I always love a BTS intro. And great way to start the segment. Yes. So I am what the Army calls baby Army. So I went to my first concert, my first BTS concert. That was in Vegas. And yeah, I felt like it was a cultural moment that I could not miss, not only because they're a global phenomenon, but as you note, they make up a significant, they have a significant economic impact on the South Korean economy. So there is a reason as a journalist, as an analyst, to try to understand what kind of an impact they have. But I just wanted to be part of that moment. Now, just to explain, this is the first tour that BTS has done since the seven members of BTS finished their military service. So they were on a three-year hiatus. And so this is an interesting moment for us to remember that the men in South Korea do have a mandatory military service that is a legacy or a vestige of the Korean War. And so that's a reminder. They are still locked in a state of war in Korea. We sometimes forget that. Their fans, who call themselves the Army, not to be confused with the South Korean Army, this is the BTS Army, have been patient, but I think there have been questions over the years. Will they get back together? So they got back together this spring, released an album, and it has been an absolute global frenzy. And so I did feel kind of like maybe going to see the Beatles before they broke up, that I had to go see what all of this was about. And it did not disappoint, Bill. I have to tell you, I had to learn a whole new language. So who's your bias? Does that mean anything to you? So which member do you favor? Learning new phrases that BTS themselves have come up with. So just felt like I was inducted into this entire global world. People flew from all over the world. I met people from Mexico, South America, Japan, which is amazing to see Japanese visitors holding up BTS, the South Korean flag. So we know historically that those two countries have an extremely complicated relationship.
And there was a time when there were laws about music of one country being excluded from another. And just the Arirang Global Tour has just smashed through all of any vestiges of any of that. And it's astounding. Now they're heading again South Korea, but to Europe. There's a Latin American part of this. It's around the world.
Yes, and so let me just talk about Vegas.
Of course.
So we talk about economic impact. The entire city just turned into BTS. Everywhere you went, it was BTS everywhere. So all these businesses had special BTS meals. So it was Korean food. So you saw Korean culture everywhere in Vegas. They lit up the Sphere, which is that huge dome. Mm-hmm. Really stunning. So I will post some of the video. I haven't done that yet on my social media. Mm-hmm. So Instagram is NewsJean if you want to get a taste of what happened in Vegas, although it's all over, I think, people's feeds. But absolutely, they had a huge reception in Mexico that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So every concert was sold out. Those tickets sold out in under an hour. And then tens of thousands of fans were outside on the streets who couldn't get tickets, but they were outside the stadium just to be part of it. And then 50,000 fans turned up to the plaza outside the presidential palace just to get a glimpse of BTS with their president. Just a few. And so that blew my mind.
The president who asked, by the way, for another concert. Yes.
And so, you know, just talking about Vegas, Vegas did do a good job of capitalizing on the BTS phenomenon and trying to jump on that economic bandwagon. And so we'll see that in all these places. As you mentioned, they're going to Europe, they're going to the East Coast, across Asia. Huge tour, and every one of those concerts brings in money for that region. But yes, they do bring billions every year to the South Korean economy just by virtue of the fandom and all of the economic activity related to this absolute obsession with BTS. So, and then there's that, as you mentioned, the soft power diplomacy, the ability they have to promote South Korean culture and to promote their message, which has been very much a message of inclusion. And so that has been really astounding to see. So I will tell you, as an ethnic Korean who grew up in Minnesota, I could not have imagined growing up at a time when no one knew anything about Korea that I would see so many non-Koreans waving the South Korean flag, but also singing BTS songs in Korean. And so the title, as you mentioned, of the tour and of their album is called Arirang. Now, this has huge significance. It gives me the chills to think about it for any of us who is Korean. I used to sing that song in North Korea because it's a song hugely significant in North Korea as well. And to hear that song being sung, woven into the songs that they perform, but also sung by the entire Allegiant Stadium crowd, just, I think for every ethnic Korean, it just is a moment of incredible, emotion. That song generates emotion, but to see it sung by BTS, and what that tells us is that they recognize their role as cultural ambassadors, their role that goes beyond just pop music or rap music, but that the role that they play in being ambassadors for their culture, their country, for the Hallyu movement, for K-pop, for Korean culture. So it's pretty amazing for someone like me to see that happening. And yes, I want to give a shout out to the Hawaii Army. They were there in force. You saw aloha signs everywhere. So I'll put some video of that as well. Huge fan base here. So now we just have to find a way to get them back here to Hawaii.
You know, that idea of cultural introduction and Hallyu, the Korean wave, has been around for some time, but BTS is taking this to a different level.
Oh, yes. They've elevated it. So I didn't know if this Hallyu wave would get beyond Asia, but it is clearly a global phenomenon. And so it really is, it is interesting to see how that has gone beyond expectation and contributed not only in terms of diplomacy and the economy, but also culturally.
Jean Lee, she's presidential chair at the East-West Center in Honolulu, co-hosts also the Peabody Award-nominated podcast The Lazarus Heist on BBC World Service about a North Korean state-sponsored computer hacking syndicate and BTS Army baby member.
Yes, baby army. So are we going to go out on some BTS? No? Well, I will put on some BTS in the car on the way home for sure.
Jean, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz.
Oni ola nai, o Maui, o Kahoolawe, o Hawaii.
Can a plant play music? Eh, not really. But we heard about a technology company that's been making music with the electrical signals of plants. Using two electrodes, a pocket-sized device from the company PlantWave can detect and graph the electrical variations humming through plant life and map them to notes and pitches. We won't dive too deep into the details, but here's what it sounds like. Pretty cool, right? That beat was made by a bulbous crop that arrived in Hawaii thousands of years ago. It's closely related to peaches, plums, cherries, and olives. But this canoe crop is getting harder to find by the day because of an invasive pest named for its pointed horns. Can you tell us the name of the plant that produced that sweet beat? Call 808-941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. First one to get it right gets a reusable tote bag from HPR. You'll also snag a deck of the plant-themed card game Kumula'au, courtesy of our friends at Trees for Honolulu's Future.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nareit Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for families of agricultural workers and retirees, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation. NareitHawaii.com.
The affordability crisis is a national condition, and it has some localized characteristics here in Hawaii, starting with housing. And especially on Oahu, part of that picture is the condo market, and what Hawaii Business Magazine this month calls the disappearing affordable condos of Honolulu. Cynthia Wessendorf wrote that piece, and she joins us to talk about it. And Cynthia, thanks for joining us, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us. And I got to say, I really appreciate the context you add to the condo story in Honolulu and how it touches so many other costs and pressures today.
That's right. I mean, I think housing is probably the number one cost that everybody has. And it's extremely difficult to find anything that's affordable. I did want to look at the condos as opposed to houses or rentals because there's many reasons to try to get into the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a middle-income person and not sitting on a pile of money, the only, you know, your best bet is to just get a condo. And there are quite a few options and avenues that you can use in Hawaii to try to get condos that are affordable. But both of them are challenging and full of potential, you know, pitfalls. So one is to buy some of these older units, which were built in the 70s and 80s when there was a building boom. And that boom sort of died like a dog, and now we have very little building. Or you can get a condo in a new building that's going up that's been set aside for local people making a certain income. But that also is a program which has been quite good in the past, but it's sort of, it's just not working as it was intended. It's falling apart.
You know, it's interesting, starting on that historical part about the boom in 70s construction. At one point, just on pure supply and demand, you cite a study by UHERO, the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization, that found that by 2010, new home construction generally was a third of what it was in the 1970s.
That's right. You know, at this point, I think the biggest barrier to building is actually permitting. Well, one, there's the cost. There's like a huge amount of bureaucracy involved. And it's very hard to get permits. You know, it's a slow, laborious process.
That combination that, again, you hear a study about 1% land costs, right. The costs overall, 41% construction, and then 58% is regulatory costs.
Exactly. This is according to UHERO, but they have studied it, you know. Mm. So, yeah, I think land and construction in Hawaii are the highest in the nation, but it still only accounts for like 40-something percent of the cost of a building.
And yet there have been housing success stories and condo success stories. And this, you talk about intent and the intent of saving some space for local folks, having some cost conditions, 80% to 140% of area median income, helping folks get that foot in the door and the foot up the ladder on the housing scale. You cite the very specific case of 801 South Street and workforce housing.
Right.
Talk about that one a bit.
So that one had, it was built, I think they opened in 2015 and the second tower in 2017. Hmm. And the way that the system is set up now to get into these units that are set aside for local people, middle class people, you have to say that you will live in there for 10 years. There's also some other requirements, but you're expected to occupy your unit. You cannot rent it. You cannot sell it on the open market. If you sell it, you have to sell it back to the state for no money, no equity. So 801 South Street was very different. It had income restrictions for like 80% of the units. Mm-hmm. Some were open market. But you had to stay for like 2 years, and then it was yours, and you could do whatever you wanted with it.
And there were naysayers at the time who said, oh, after 2 years, everybody's going to sell out and leave. But it hasn't transpired that way.
It has not. And this is according to a study that was done by Housing Hawaii's Future, which is a nonprofit group that's kind of focused on young people trying to get into housing. When they look back at it, these units are still being occupied by the original owners. Some of them are being rented, but they're usually going or always going to people that are still in that 80 to 120% income range. So it's still like a middle class housing development that has like 1,000 units. You know, now often the units are set aside in kind of luxury buildings. Hmm. So 801 South Street is like a no frills operation, no pool. Mm-hmm. No guaranteed, sort of open parking.
Right.
There is a space for you, but it's open. Not a lot of like amenities.
The idea, though, that this has been a success story, not to oversimplify, but why not replicate the success story?
Well, I asked everyone I talked to. Everyone agreed from different, these are from different agencies and organizations. Everyone thought it was a success story, and it's a little confusing as to why it just died. Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that lessons can be learned from the experience of 801 South Street and applied elsewhere? And from the developer's perspective, because it's got to start there. The developers need to want to build these.
Exactly. I think like a lot of cities, they will have a set of rules for building. Mm-hmm. And if you fulfill those set of rules, I think it's called by right laws. Mm-hmm. If you fulfill those set of rules, you can go. You already get like your permit. It's ready to go.
In Honolulu, the rules are different depending on where you want to build, though.
Exactly.
And the authorities overseeing it are different depending on where the location is.
Exactly.
So perhaps a modification or alignment of rules would be interesting. Cynthia, appreciate this. It's a very in-depth piece. You can read her piece, The Disappearing Affordable Condos of Honolulu, in this month's edition of Hawaii Business. Cynthia Wessendorf, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA, celebrating over 88 years of dedication in supporting the health and well-being of the people of Hawaii with a commitment to caring for the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
In South Africa, animal rights advocates are suing the Johannesburg Zoo to release their captive elephants.
Continued confinement in the Johannesburg Zoo is unconscionable and fundamentally detrimental to the well-being of these sentient animals.
But whether those elephants can survive in the wild is uncertain. That's next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Aloha, this is Patrick Hart from the UH Hilo Department of Biology. We're bringing you a special series called Ahui Manu Minute that explores our cultural connection to Hawaii's native birds. It's built around an ʻole led by Kekuhi Kealii Kanaka ʻole o Haile Lani. Today you'll hear a portion of the ʻole that focuses on the kiwikiu or Maui parrotbill. Lisa Mason with UH Hilo Lohe Lab will guide you through its meaning. Take a listen.
O ka lele a nei au na o ka hakai a la lani o ho o noho noho a pa. Ha nau ke kiwi kiu. Kani kia ia ko o hi u noho i kei. O la maulo e ke kanawa o noho i u ka. O ke kiwi kiu au na lele a pa. Pa a hia.
The kiwikiu is born. It resounds, accompanied by the ʻōhiʻuhiʻu, which dwells at sea, healthy and ever-enduring through the kanawao, which dwells inland. The kiwikiu flies in droves everlasting. They are secured. At barely more than 100 remaining individuals in the wild, kiwikiu are one of the rarest and most endangered birds in the world. This ʻole ties them to the blue parrotfish from the sea, and kanawao from the high-elevation forests on Maui where they live, and whose fruits are home to certain beetle larvae, which are among their favorite foods. As you listen to the call of the kiwikiu, we invite you to join us in imitating their kani, to offer a pulse of vitality for their success. Mahalo a hui manu for today's ʻole, and thanks to the Lohe Lab for the recordings of kiwikiu. For Hawaii Public Radio, I'm Lisa Mason.
Support for Manu Minute comes from Hawaii Forest and Trail, exploring Hawaii Island with kama'aina and visitors, offering volcano adventures, waterfall experiences, and more at hawaii-forest.com.
Now it's time to give you the answer to today's backyard quiz and name that plant. Earlier in the program, we asked you to identify what crop made a rhythmic beat using a device from the company PlantWave. It's a tiny gadget that translates electrical variations in plant life to musical notes. Take a listen to this self-produced single from a hibiscus flower in Hawaii. Earlier, we played another clip for you and asked you to name the plant behind the beat. It's one that's become synonymous with Hawaii, despite not being native to the islands. Polynesian voyagers brought this edible plant with them as a canoe crop. And if Cocos nucifera was your guess, you'd be spot on. The answer to today's backyard quiz is everyone's favorite Drupal, the coconut, or new. No winners on that today. Today's quiz... If you have a quiz you'd like to share, write to TalkBack at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. If you have a recent high school graduate in your family, you know how special that experience is anywhere, but in many ways, especially here in Hawaii. This year, Hawaii Public Radio did a special graduation project with Kapolei High School. It's the brainchild of D.W. Gibson, a former producer here on The Conversation, who's now executive producer of podcasts and multimedia here at the station. And he joins us to talk a bit about the project and, for the first time, share some of the extraordinary thoughts and sounds of students leading up to graduation day. And, D.W., this really captured some voices and reflections in a pretty special way.
Yeah, we took a kind of unusual approach here where we enlisted 10 seniors at Kapolei High School, and we asked them to maintain what we called an audio journal, where every week they just took a couple of minutes to go into a quiet room by themselves and collect their thoughts about how the month leading up to graduation was going for them, all the emotions, all the activity, everything they were going through, and share that with our listeners.
That's great. And you got a bit of a variety of voices as well.
We did. And I really have to tip of the cap to Principal Wesley Shinkawa and one of the counselors at the school, Christina Subiono. They were so helpful in identifying a group of students that really had a range of perspectives and experiences. I mean, we had a couple of students when we began the project. To be frank, it wasn't clear if they were going to graduate. They were really on the cusp of that academically. And so to go through that ride with these 10 students in their very different places in their academic career, it's really rich and dynamic.
And we start off with that broadcast of characters 2 weeks ahead of graduation.
Hello, this is Israel Alvarez-Hiron coming in from Kapolei High. And we are currently 2 weeks from graduation.
Hi, my name is Faith Madison.
Hello, my name is Nalajio Ledward.
My name is Kira.
My name is Ivy Thompson.
My name is Tara Lancy.
My name is Heidi Herrera.
Hello, my name is Justice Kilikea. I am 17 years old, and I am the graduating class of 26 at Kapolei High.
I just feel like the school year just kind of happened like so quickly. Like I remember the first day of school very well. And then like just thinking back then to like now, I think it's just very, it's honestly like sad, like very reminiscing feeling, I think. Cause it's just like, it goes by a lot quicker. Like you're reminded about that throughout the entire time in high school. But then when it actually like gets there, you think back, it's like, damn, it happened quick.
I'm being the eldest child. So it's first time for parents to have a kid leaving. My first time, you know, existing and leaving at the same time. And my sisters, they're not going to have me around much anymore. We've already come to accept that. Got a decent amount of money saved up. It's kind of weird being the first one leaving. I'm so used to seeing older classmen leave or leaving just to go to another high school since my dad's military. But like I said, week of first, right?
The best part of my week was when my teacher, Mr. Peter, noticed that I was changing as a person and was doing better in school because I used to be a troublemaker and not really listen to nobody and start problems with a lot of people. But he noticed that I was changing as a good person and getting more things done and respecting more people as a result of that. All throughout my years here, I've just been goofing off and not doing my work. But ever since the start of the year, I started to do more work, pay attention in class more, and be more respectful towards others. And I've really started to enjoy school because a lot of people are actually making an effort to talk to me now. Because back then, I used to cut off everybody from girls to boys to teachers to friends, family, because I didn't want to deal with nobody's problems.
Hi, good morning, Hurricanes. Congratulations on another successful school year.
I wish I started going out with my friends more often earlier, because now that I've been able to hang out with them almost on a daily basis this week, it makes me miss what I could have had like in previous semesters or even quarters, because we're all going our separate ways after graduation.
Right now I'm just feeling like I don't know how to feel, because like I know things are going to be way different once I'm out of here.
My journey of being a high school student was a bit different. In my freshman year, I was diagnosed with stage 3 Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a type of cancer that's rare and that affects lymph nodes. I didn't really get to experience a normal high school teenager life that most kids got to experience. Instead, I spent mine in hospitals, doctor visits, going to school in a wheelchair, wearing a mask 24/7, worrying about my health, and eventually dealing with bullies. Thankfully, after multiple rounds of horrific chemotherapy treatment, during my sophomore year, I was able to beat cancer and ring the bell. As of today, I'm now 3 years in remission and excited for graduation. And if you told me I was graduating soon, freshman me wouldn't believe you whatsoever.
It's just beginning to dawn on me, especially with this, that, you know, high school's wrapping up. I'm a senior, soon to be a freshman. And really, I just really appreciated my time here at Kapolei High School. I really think, you know, as you work up through the grades, like, you're not as, like, connected with the teachers and the other students yet. But as you work up, then you really just feel this incredible sense of community. And, you know, like, I didn't know I would be such good friends with my engineering teachers in the end, because I really enjoy my time, like, even TAing for Mr. Kawamura and working with the sophomores in addition to my other engineering projects.
The Hurricane of the Year Award is given to a senior that has demonstrated the spirit of one team throughout their 4 years. This is a student who has exemplified the values, skills, and abilities that all students should strive for. Can I get a drum roll, please? Your Hurricane of the Year is Tara Lynn Singh!
To my surprise, I ended up getting the award for Hurricane of the Year. As the final weeks of senior year are approaching, I'm feeling very nervous about the life I'm going to leave behind once I graduate. But I'm also very excited for what lies ahead for me. I am not going to be staying in Hawaii after high school, as I'm committed to Purdue University to major in motorsports engineering this fall. So moving to a new state and not seeing familiar faces will be a challenge for me. But as my journey continues, I will face it with confidence, moving past my final year of high school, keeping the guidance my teachers have given me, and the life lessons I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else.
The voices and thoughts of a number of students, and now graduates, of Kapolei High School. It's part of a special project the school did with us here at Hawaii Public Radio. We'll be back with more of it in just a moment. You're listening to The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. You're back with The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bill Dorman, and I'm joined by HPR's executive producer of podcasts and multimedia, D.W. Gibson, with a project he's been working on, hearing from students and now graduates at Kapolei High School. D.W., why that two-week period to zoom in on?
Well, we wanted to have a good measure of time that wasn't too much expanse, but really sort of taking a close look at that crescendo, right? Those critical days where all the classes are wrapping up, all the preparations are being made, everything is hitting that fevered pitch, and to capture as much of that as possible. And not just that 2 weeks leading up to graduation, but a couple of weeks after, right? Such a watershed moment, wanting to understand the color after the moment of each person's life and how they were processing the act of graduating after it was done.
Real snapshot in time. And for everyone, high school graduation represents achievement. And for some, it's a chance for some special recognition.
We would now like to acknowledge the students that teachers regard as more than ordinary students. These students do well in and out of school, and they embody what it means to be outstanding.
There are 6 more school days and 14 more days till graduation. I'm like, I am so excited to, like, get out of school, you know? Like, who wants to stay in school and do finals? Not me.
With graduation coming up, everything is crunch time, but a part of me knows that if I work really hard, that it will be all worth it when I graduate and see all my families cheering for me, that like I deserve to be there.
The hardest part about my week was having to come up for my speech. This speech had to talk about how I've grown in the past 3 years. The way I addressed this was by going through my phone and looking through all the pictures and memories I made with all my friends and my classes and stuff. How I'm feeling about the end of the school year right now is that it's almost done and I'm just waiting to leave already and so I can just get money.
We all truly appreciate your hard work and passion you share with our Hurricanes. What you teach within these halls carry with us for the rest of our lives and create outstanding community members, creators, and thinkers. Thank you once again for your tremendous work here. Students, please give a huge round of applause to our faculty.
We recently just started our finals for seniors, so it was pretty exciting. We had up to four now, depending on our teachers. So almost done. Grades are looking better than last check-in. Hardest part about this week, I would say, will be my math final, as well as just like the impending feeling of everything wrapping up. We're closing out 12 years worth of education. So looking forward as well as not looking forward to that at the same time. Feeling kind of anxious and excited at the same time.
All week, I have been working my tail end off with my physics group to finish our final project. It has been demanding and a lengthy process. I have been extremely stressed out and have no idea how I've been able to push through. It's been hard thinking about graduating and not being somewhat sad, but since I've been extremely occupied with all my projects, I've honestly forgot I'm even graduating. And I have my AP pre-calculus exam on Tuesday next week. I'm terrified and feel so unprepared. I'm literally just going to be studying all weekend.
The hardest part of my week was making sure I turned in my missing assignments for different classes. That was the hardest part of my week because, you know, I was just like stressing it and overthinking it.
Like, I was pretty much studying, like, almost every single night for my pre-calc test and, like, finishing my early college class. I'm doing English 100, so, like, we had to write, like, a 2,000-word essay, and, like, that was, like, killing me. But, you know, we got it done.
We will now present the Service to the Class Award. This award recognizes students who went above and beyond their duties as a hurricane this year.
Something bright happened this week, and that was that I got a mail from the Department of Education saying that I am one of 57 class of 2026 valedictorians graduating from Kapolei High School as summa cum laude. When I got the letter, I showed my family members, and they were so happy for me, especially my Auntie Jamie. My auntie was so happy, she started to cry for me, and eventually I got emotional. Yeah, so irritating, because I do not like crying, but it's okay.
Leading up to graduation, a few of the feelings that I'm going through right now are kind of like bittersweet. I'm really excited to graduate, but after senior awards night, I could barely look at my teachers and realize that, oh my gosh, there's less than a week.
Going to my old teachers, like my freshman teachers and sophomore teachers, and talking story with them one last time before having to leave, and then getting their little note or signature in my yearbook. It was a nice refresher seeing my old teachers.
Yeah, yearbooks came out. Everyone signed the yearbooks. I'm trying to sign everyone's yearbook, but it's so hard to like summarize like all your experiences with these people who I've grown so incredibly close with over the years. You know, like some people I've known since like Kapolei Elementary School. I've been Kapolei all the way, Kapolei Elementary, Kapolei Middle, and then now Kapolei High. And then, you know, some of these people I've grown up with like through the school like my entire life, and now they're gonna go off in all these different places to pursue what they gotta pursue, and I think that's cool. I wish them all the best.
Seeing our senior portraits get put up on the fence, that's kind of like a known tradition for our school, that we just put up our posters along that fence that goes along the front of our school. I think seeing that was kind of like surreal, because it's like, yup, it makes it more real.
I think this part was like another big step that was to kind of take in to put into perspective how close we are to graduation. So I think that thing is also like very exciting and just kind of, again, nerve-wracking. But it was really cool seeing them. And they actually put them up pretty quick, so I thought that was also cool too. Right now, still feeling a little scared, but still like happy that like we're gonna be graduating, but also just a little sad. Still kind of bittersweet. I think the more closer we get, the more excitement and the more sadness kind of builds.
Excitement and sadness. DW, quite the range of emotions.
Yeah, and you have to hand it to the students for really sharing and being open with us.
That's great. You'll be able to listen to these on our website at hawaiipublicradio.org. And we're going to be back tomorrow with some more thoughts and voices from Kapolei High on the other side of graduation. DW Gibson's the executive producer of podcasts and multimedia here at HPR. Thanks for coming along today.
Thanks for having me.
That's the program for today. Up tomorrow, we also plan to talk to the governor. His veto list is due by the end of the month. What bills are you concerned might be on the chopping block? Give us a call and leave your feedback on our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Bill Dorman, in for Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.